Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Jeffrey Smith. Behind all the politics and all the special interest dollars, what's the real scoop on genetically engineered foods? Jeffrey Smith's meticulous research has made him a world authority on the dangers of genetically engineered foods. He's founder of the Institute for Responsible Technology, which is a nonprofit education and advocacy organization that's shared critical insights and helped catalyze change in more than 30 countries on 6 continents. Jeffrey is author of the best-selling book Seeds of Deception and producer of the award-winning film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, which has been seen by millions of people and was chosen by Solari Report as the 2012 Movie of the Year. He's been interviewed for hundreds of media outlets, including the New York Times, Washington Post, Associated Press, Reuters News Service, and Time Magazine. And he's appeared on dozens of television programs, from BBC to NPR to Fox News to Dr. Oz. So now, Jeffrey, we are so grateful to have this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad, John Robbins.
Thank you, Ocean. And thank you, Jeffrey, for being with us once again. It's always a joy to talk with you.
I love talking to you guys. You are cutting edge and really deeply informed. Ocean is right. I've been interviewed hundreds of times, and you actually do your homework to a level of depth that is rare and rarefied.
Well, thank you. And the topic is serious, and it affects people's health and lives in a substantial way, and it deserves our full attention, I think. And I want to start the conversation with you with the recognition that there are scientists working at the FDA who have long been saying that GMOs are dangerous, that they should be carefully tested. Before the FDA decided to allow GMOs into food without labeling, FDA scientists had repeatedly warned that genetically modified foods could create unpredictable, hard-to-detect side effects, including allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems. Today, we're hearing often from those who say that GMO opponents are fearmongers and wild-eyed activists who spread misinformation. The March 2015 issue of National Geographic featured a cover story titled The War on Science, and it had a picture on the cover of a fake moon landing. The article associates those who question the safety of GMOs with those who believe the moon landing was faked. And yet scientists representing the Consumers Union, the Center for Food Safety, Friends of the Earth, the Pesticide Action Network, and many, many other groups are saying, and 300 of them recently signed a statement saying, that there is no scientific consensus whatsoever on GMO safety. What's your view of this controversy?
Well, the cover story in National Geographic really came, I believe, from a full-court press public relations strategy by a desperate industry. The information about the dangers of genetically engineered foods, the awareness of people about the fact that the FDA put it on the market in spite of the concerns by their own scientists, and there's a whole story about that, all that's getting out. And the number of Americans who are trying to avoid GMOs, or at least saying they are, went from 15% in 2007 to 40% in 2014, and we are on the verge of a tipping point. And so the other side, primarily with dollars from Monsanto, has revved up their public relations campaign and has resulted in recycling the same empty myths. The concept that GMOs are safe and that it uses cutting-edge science is totally a public relations myth. It has no basis in reality. The scientists at the FDA, as you pointed out, had repeatedly warned that GMOs were different than traditional breeding, not an extension of natural breeding, and that they lead to different risks. So that was political science. And that's what was being repeated in the National Geographic article, claiming that GMOs were just an extension of natural breeding, which is false.
I always find it interesting that Monsanto and its allies will say, when labeling issues are brought up, oh, there's no difference. They're substantially equivalent. GMO foods are safe and healthy, and there's nothing to see here. But then when they want to patent them, they say, oh, they're completely different. That's why we can patent them. And they're also saying that genetic engineering is a precise technique that allows the genes coding for a desired trait to be inserted into the host plant with predictable outcomes. But the truth, as you've repeatedly shown, is that genetic engineering today is crude, it's imprecise, and it's highly mutagenic. It causes unpredictable changes in the DNA, in proteins, and in the biochemical composition of the resulting crop. And this often results in unexpected toxic or allergenic effects and nutritional disturbances and unpredictable effects in the environment. Everything I've learned in studying GMO crops for the last 20 years tells me that they're not about feeding the world. They're about patented ownership of the food supply.
It turns out that the most predictable consequence of genetic engineering is surprise side effects. And the GMO, at the end of the day, after you've taken a gene gun and inserted millions of genes into a plate of millions of cells, hoping that some of those genes will make it into the DNA of some of those cells, and then clone those cells into a plant, the mother plant, or the resulting plant, is maybe 2 to 4% different than the original. And most of those are mutations. Hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the DNA. Now, those mutations can create changes, as you say, in the protein expression, and yet they do not even look for those changes before they commercialize a crop. Long after Monsanto's corn was commercialized, this called Mon-A10, their most popular BT toxin-creating corn, it's a corn that produces its own insecticide, they not only found the insecticide as predicted, but they found 42 other genes that had produced either much more protein or much less protein, including a gene that's normally silenced in corn that was producing an allergen in Monsanto's corn. In other words, without labels, there is an allergen that might cause a serious allergic reaction, possibly death, in the corn in the United States, produced completely by accident from the process of genetic engineering, and that nothing in the review process, the meaningless exercise called the voluntary review process, consultation process by the FDA, required that Monsanto or anyone else would discover this allergen.
I hear you saying that Monsanto's genetically engineered corn can cause serious allergenic reactions. What about their genetically engineered soy? Does it also contain allergens?
Likewise, in their soy, they have a known allergen, as all soy does, called trypsin inhibitor. But after cooking it, it was as much as 7 times higher in genetically modified cooked soy compared to non-GMO cooked soy. This was Monsanto's own study, and they hid the evidence. They conducted the trial, and they found the result, and they did not publish it, but it was discovered later when someone asked the journal archives to turn over the data from a published article that Monsanto authors did do, and there it was, right in front of them, as much as a 7-fold increase in a known allergen in the soy. Again, part of the background noise of this very imprecise and primitive technology.
Consumers Union is the policy arm of Consumer Reports. And Consumers Union is saying repeatedly now that the claims that we hear for the safety and the efficacy of genetically modified crops are typically based on dubious evidence or no evidence at all. And they give the example, the public is told that genetically engineered foods are no more likely to cause allergic reactions than non-GM foods, and that they've been fully assessed for allergenicity. But according to Consumers Union, that is a complete myth. And if a GMO did prove to be allergenic, how would we find out, since there's no post-commercialization monitoring carried out anywhere in the world?
You're right about the fact that they are more likely to produce allergens. And what's further is that there's no way we can guarantee that it won't. You see, we're introducing in GMOs new proteins that have never been part of the human food chain. And in order to elicit an allergic reaction in humans, you need to have multiple exposures. You can't just take a new protein and put it into human blood and notice a change right away. They have to develop a response to it. And so without a surefire method, the World Health Organization has come up with criteria designed to minimize the likelihood that a new novel protein will cause allergic reactions. And what they do is they ask the developers of the GMOs to compare the properties of the new protein with a database and properties of existing allergens.
Do today's genetically modified crops meet the World Health Organization standards?
It turns out that genetically modified corn and soy and papaya all fail the WHO criteria. There are amino acid sequences which are too identical to known allergens like dust mites and shrimp. And yet, this was just a recommendation. It was not a requirement. And so even though these products fail the WHO criteria, they're still on the market and may be creating allergic reactions. Soon after GMO soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. It could be a number of things that would cause this reaction. It could be that known soy allergen trypsin inhibitor on the increase. It could be the fact that the Roundup Ready protein, which is created by the inserted gene that allows the soybean to be sprayed with Roundup herbicide and not die, that protein that was inserted, that actually has properties of a dust mite allergen. We know that the Roundup Ready soybeans have suppressed digestive enzymes, and so by slowing down the digestive proteins, it might actually cause allergic reactions to a variety of foods. There are many reasons why genetic engineering may create allergic reactions, and yet there's very little evaluation before it goes onto the market.
And there's very little tracking after it goes to market because we don't have labeling. If there were increasing health problems, Jeffrey, would we even know?
Now, as you say, if it were increasing health problems, we wouldn't necessarily know. If you just took a look at a long list of diseases that are on the rise in the U.S. population and charted their slope of increase and compared it to the slope of increase of the use of GMOs and the use of Roundup, which is sprayed on most genetically modified crops because they're Roundup ready, that slope is uncannily tight. In other words, the correlation is extremely high. Correlation does not prove causation, but if there is a relationship between the GMO and the disease, then that would be supporting evidence. So if GMOs are tightly linked to autism and allergies and Alzheimer's and all sorts of gastrointestinal disorders, and many types of cancer and deaths from senile dementia and Alzheimer's and high blood pressure and obesity, as these graphs indicate that they might, then until we have a serious exploration of GMOs and their effects, then they may be continuing to elevate these problems without any serious investigation.
When you mentioned gastrointestinal disorders, I found myself thinking about the enormous increase we are seeing in inflammatory bowel disease, colitis, leaky gut syndrome, gluten intolerance, and a host of other gastrointestinal problems. Now, we've seen this increase at the exact same time as Monsanto has introduced a genetically engineered corn, BT corn, into the food supply. These are corn plants that have been engineered to express the BT toxin in every cell. And this is a toxin designed to break open the stomach of insects and kill them. Now, the EPA has said that this has no impact on human cells, and that the BT toxin is destroyed in the human digestive tract, and therefore does not represent a danger to human health. But the EPA, in making that statement, has been simply extrapolating from data provided to them by Monsanto and the other biotech companies. I have always wondered what objective research would say about this, and then I came across a study published in the Journal of Applied Toxicology that speaks directly to this question. I'm wondering if you're aware of that study, and if you are, could you explain?
If this is a 2012 study by Seralini and friends, then I am aware of it. They exposed BT toxin to human cells in test tubes and found that indeed it poked holes in the human cells, quote, just like in insects. In other words, the BT toxin kills insects by creating little tiny micropores in the walls of the intestines and or whatever, walls of their stomachs or their digestive tract. The bacteria from inside the digestive tract goes into other places. It basically it destroys the integrity of their guts and they die. The same type of small holes were observed in human cells. Now, by the way, the EPA Science Advisory Panel had warned the EPA years before that the human studies and mouse studies on BT toxin as a spray, because we know that BT toxin, before it was put into crops, was collected from soil bacteria and used as a spray in gardening and farming, that there was evidence that even in the spray form, it was creating allergic-type reactions in humans and animals. And it was also causing damage to the intestinal walls. But the EPA ignored its science advisory panel and waved on these crops that produce this BT toxin at thousands of times the concentration as that in spray form. And while the spray can wash off or biodegrade in a few days, the toxin in the cell remains intact because it's encapsulated. It's also designed to be more toxic than the spray form. So even if the spray were completely benign, there is absolutely no justification for not testing that same BT toxin or the altered BT toxin as produced in crops. If we are creating holes in the walls of the intestines in this generation, that is a very serious issue because leaky gut is now linked to autism, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, cancer, autoimmune disease, allergies, and gluten sensitivity, among others.
Could you explain how leaky gut is related to autoimmune disease?
The way that leaky gut is linked to autoimmune disease is very interesting. Undigested food proteins can pass through these holes prematurely before they're broken down. They present themselves to the immune system as an invader. All the immune system cells will attack it, and they'll take out their little mini iPhones and take pictures of it, post the pictures on the internal Facebook, and tell the rest of the immune system, attack anything that looks like that. But they're using old iPhones, and they're actually fuzzy, and when the rest of the immune system looks at it, it's not that clear. And through a process of molecular mimicry, they start attacking anything that looks like that photo, which could be the thyroid or the pancreas or the microvilli, and that's what autoimmune disease is. The immune system attacking the body because it's mistaking the body for these, in most cases, these undigested food proteins that have gotten through these holes in the walls of the intestine.
Jeffrey, I hear you saying that the BT toxin that is present in every cell of Monsanto's genetically modified corn may be linked to damage in the intestinal walls of humans causing leaky gut. And this would be quite serious because we know that leaky gut can lead to a host of diseases, including autoimmune disease. Almost all the genetically modified foods that are on the market today and that are in our food supply are either designed to express the BT toxin in every cell or to tolerate massive sprayings of toxic herbicides, most commonly Monsanto's herbicide Roundup. The World Health Organization recently declared Roundup's active ingredient, glyphosate, to be a probable carcinogen, meaning that it likely causes cancer in humans. There is also serious concern that the unprecedented levels of Roundup we're seeing today could be damaging the bacteria that live in our guts and on whose health we depend more than we often realize.
Now, Roundup goes a little bit further in that its active ingredient also shuts down a biochemical pathway called the shikimate pathway that's used by our gut bacteria to produce things like L-tryptophan. And L-tryptophan is a precursor to serotonin and melatonin. And these aromatic amino acids are also the precursor to dopamine. So these are extremely important neurotransmitters that may be depleted because of the amount of Roundup in our food supply. And if we are depleted in serotonin, for example, it could affect mood and behavior. It could eliminate its serotonin's ability to tell the body, I'm satiated, I'm full, I don't have to eat anymore. It also, serotonin also helps regulate blood sugar. Melatonin helps regulate sleep. These may be some of the reasons why so many people who have told us that when they stop eating GMOs, their mood and behavior improves, their sleep cycle improves, their blood sugar situation is improved, and all these other aspects. Roundup also can help disable another metabolic pathway that helps the liver detox. So that means all the other toxins that we're exposed to in the environment that are normally ushered out of the system through the liver may become amplified by this other aspect of Roundup. Finally, it's also an endocrine disruptor and promotes growth of cancer cells at tiny, tiny amounts. You'd think that with all of these things, that the government would be very, very careful about the amount of Roundup that was being used on food. Instead, the EPA, a year and a half ago, raised the allowable residues of Roundup on over 160 plants, food crops, because Roundup is now being used not just on Roundup Ready crop, but on other crops like wheat and barley and lentils and rye and certain fruits and vegetables before harvest as a ripening agent. So I used to say to people, it's very important to avoid GMOs and buying organic is the best. Now I would say there's a very strong case for organic being very critical because the amount of Roundup that's being sprayed on even non-GMO crops.
We've had decades of promises from the biotech industry that genetically engineered food would reduce the use of agricultural chemicals. But instead, they've mostly given us crops like the Roundup Ready ones that have been designed to withstand repeated sprayings of toxic herbicides. And this has meant the addition of hundreds of millions of pounds of these toxic weed-killing chemicals to our farmland and to our food crops. In the hands of agrochemical companies, Monsanto and Syngenta and Dow and Bayer, the genetic engineering of our food has gotten us ever more entrenched on a pesticide treadmill. If we continue down the GMO path, can this mean anything but ever greater chemical pollution of our bodies and the food chain and the earth?
What's happening is very, very tragic in that treadmill. In the first 16 years of GMOs, the herbicide-tolerant crops like Roundup Ready crops have increased the use of herbicides by over half a billion pounds. Now, with such a drenching of our fields with this weed killer, the weeds have obviously started to develop resistance and have outsmarted Monsanto on more than 70 million acres. So now we have weeds that are Roundup ready. The response by the industry is to create new genetically modified crops that are now tolerant to a whole slew of chemicals, including 2,4-D, a component in Agent Orange. It is expected that these Agent Orange-type crops can increase the use of 2,4-D by up to 20-fold. This is an acutely toxic poison, as is dicamba and the other herbicides that are now approved as for herbicide-tolerant crops. And this could further poison our food supply and our water and our air. Now, with 2,4-D and dicamba, they actually can be volatilized. They can after spraying or during spraying, but any time afterwards, they can end up floating up into the air and being blown onto a neighbor's property, into their kitchen, et cetera, with devastating results. if you want to see what our future might look like with concentrated use of GMOs and the associated chemicals, you need only look as far as Kauai, which is the island in Hawaii where there are 16,000 acres owned by the genetic engineering companies, many of whom you've just mentioned. And they are under siege by the spraying. They're spraying there in this small community on the west side every other day on average, sometimes 2 out of 3 days for an entire year. Sometimes the pesticides will just settle in the valley and people will cough and their noses will bleed and children will wake up with blood on their pillow. And they'd have to put tape on their windows and whatnot and find this kind of powdery stuff on their toaster ovens, etc. The incidence of diseases there has skyrocketed, a tenfold increase in congenital birth defects related to the heart. They have all sorts of breathing situations with asthma, etc. They're in the Waimea Middle School. Twice they've had to stop school in the middle and call for the emergency vehicles to come and take 10 children to the hospital and send others home because the pesticides had blown in, causing severe reactions. Many of the teachers working at the Waimea Middle School have had cancer and other diseases, some showing recovery when they leave the area.
The situation that you describe on the island of Kauai sounds dire and devastating. What are the people of that island doing about it?
I was there in May of 2014, and there was an effort to do a couple of things. First of all, the county council passed a law that would force these companies to disclose which chemicals they're using and also the locations of their GMO crops, and a court struck that down. But not before a list was presented to the county health commissioner for Maui County, Dr. Lauren Pang, who was absolutely flabbergasted by the combination and cocktail of the types of poisons that were being sprayed on the community. In addition, there was an effort to create a ballot initiative using the local Kauai constitution that would force them to not plant anything that could affect a neighbor's land, whether it's by spray or by pollinization. And unfortunately, the county council there struck that down with pressure from the biotech industry. In Maui, where they have at least 3,000 acres, they did pass a ballot initiative that was called from the Shaka Movement, and this was to not allow these companies to use GMOs until they've been proven safe. But a court allowed them not to implement it until a hearing was held, which was supposed to be held in March of 2015. And to my knowledge, it has not yet been held. So there's a lot of political power by the biotech industry because Hawaii is ground zero for not only seed production, but also testing new GMOs. So long before the 2,4-D tolerant crops have been commercialized, they've been tested in the fields in Hawaii and on the people living near the fields in Hawaii. And so that's one reason why it's such a serious situation, but also why there's such political power in the hands of the biotech industry, because they're the biggest employer in Molokai. They're one of the big employers in Kauai, and they give a lot of money to the mayors and the governor races, etc. So they carry a lot of weight.
The latest GMO food to be approved are genetically engineered apples that don't turn brown after they're sliced. They have found a way to silence the genes that make apples turn brown when exposed to oxygen. Now, this may seem like a trivial thing, but pre-sliced apples are already a frequently recalled food product, and once the whole fruit is sliced, it has an increased risk of exposure to pathogens. Browning is a sign that apples are no longer fresh, and I worry that masking this natural sign or signal will lead people to consume contaminated apples. I've seen media reports on this new genetically engineered apple that say it's been proven safe, but I know that the FDA does no independent pre-market safety testing of genetically engineered foods. Has there been any independent public safety studies carried out on the Arctic apple?
I'm afraid not. And I want to talk about an additional risk of the apple and also the J.R. Simplot non-browning potato approved in late 2014 as well. It's not just the fact that we may be eating sliced and rotten apples and cooking rotten potatoes and not knowing it. I mean, the apple will stay unbrowned for 15 to 18 days. And the potato will stay for days without browning at all until it dries up. Now, in addition to possibly eating rotten food or food that's been deprived of its nutritional freshness, the way that they genetically engineer these crops is extremely dangerous, in my opinion. They insert genes that produce what's called double-stranded RNA. And double-stranded RNA controls genes. They can switch genes on and usually switch genes off. They insert the specific gene that will shut down the gene expression for browning. It actually messes up the RNA of that gene.
Has there been research into what happens if we consume double-stranded RNA?
There has been studies that show that ingested, eaten double-stranded RNA can in fact change gene expression in animals, in humans. In fact, there was a study done where they fed honeybees double-stranded RNA, and it was expected to have very little consequence. The double-stranded RNA was derived from a protein that's normally used as a control in honeybee experiments. In other words, it was supposed to have a boring non-effect. But the double-stranded RNA ended up changing the expression of 1,461 genes, nearly 10% of the genes in the honeybee genome. And that it affected some when the worker bees were very young and a whole another set of genes when the worker bees were older. The USDA entomologist in 2013 wrote an article indicating that this double-stranded RNA was so unpredictable in the possibility of affecting, quote, non-target organisms that the entire regulatory process was insufficient in accommodating this risk. The EPA Science Advisory Panel in 2014, in January, held a meeting and concluded that they too did not have sufficient regulatory review processes that could protect humans or the environment from this lock-in key. But unfortunately, the USDA approvers of GMOs ignored their own entomologists. They ignored the EPA Science Advisory Panel. They ignored dozens of peer-reviewed published studies and the state-of-the-art understanding of double-stranded RNA, and allowed the apple and potato on the market without any testing and without even looking to see if the double-stranded RNA produced in the potato and the apple will match up with human genes and human regulatory factors in the DNA, which could have massive effects.
The more we learn, and the more informed we become about genetic engineering in our food supply, the more worrisome it is, the more dangers appear, the more risky the whole enterprise seems. And you've been immersing yourself in this field for 25 years. Jeffrey, how do you stay sane and hopeful? I'm honestly, I mean that question very seriously, because a lot of us feel overwhelmed and even hopeless in the face of the situation.
Well, I've got great news, John, and that is we're actually winning the battle. Now, I'm not referring to political victories. I don't look at this landscape of the battle against GMOs in the United States in particular and base my metrics on whether we've passed laws or labeling regimes, etc. We're winning because we are on the verge of a tipping point of consumer rejection. We've only touched on some of the health dangers related to GMOs. We didn't talk about how genes could transfer to gut bacteria, possibly turning our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories. We didn't talk about why children are most at risk. We didn't talk about the effects on pets, on the cats and dogs, according to numerous pet owners and veterinarians. There's a lot of things we didn't talk about, but from what we did talk about, I'm quite sure that many of the listeners are now far more vigilant at wanting to avoid eating GMOs. It is telling people the truth that has started this revolution and will win this revolution. In 1999, in Europe, a gag order was released on a top scientist in the world who had been fired from his job and silenced with threat of a lawsuit when he discovered that GMOs were inherently dangerous. When he was finally able to speak, starting on February 16, 1999, hundreds of articles were written about GMOs, and some newspapers in England actually came out against GMOs. Some came out in favor of GMOs, and according to one editor, within a week, it divided society into two warring blocks. Within the month, over 700 articles were written, and within 10 weeks of the gag order being lifted, the tipping point of consumer rejection was achieved. It was April 27th when Unilever publicly committed to stop using GM ingredients. The next day, it was Nestle's. The next week, it was the major food chains. And by that end of that week, we had won in Europe for direct GMO ingredients. They still use GMO animal feed, but the direct GMO ingredients were kicked out, not because of the European Commission, which is now still pro-GMO, but because of Unilever and Nestle's and Burger King and McDonald's and their Walmart, etc. It was the food companies responding to consumer concern.
That's taken place in Europe. Have we seen anything similar in the United States?
Here in the United States, consumer concern kicked out bovine growth hormone from Walmart, Starbucks, Yoplait, Danone, Breyers, most American dairies. We kicked GMOs out of the natural food industry, and the tipping point was in 2013. Now we have companies like Cheerios and Grape Nuts and Ben & Jerry's and Smart Balance, and I can't believe it's not butter, putting non-GMO on the package label. And these are not being sold in the natural food stores like Whole Foods. They're being sold in Walmart and Safeway and Kroger's. And if they go up in market share, that is the tipping point, because the rest of the food industry will realize they can't afford to wait until their primary competitors go non-GMO before them and eat their market share. So we are right now actually winning the battle, with 40% of Americans last year saying that they're avoiding or reducing GMOs, with three-quarters of Americans in 2013, according to the New York Times, saying they're concerned about GMOs mostly because of the health dangers. We're seeing basically a revolution in the supermarkets, which will uproot the GM crops. And our Institute for Responsible Technology, and you can access it at responsibletechnology.org, we have a five-year master plan to end GMOs in food and feed in the United States and in most countries. And we couldn't have that plan now unless we are at this level. And I've been working on this, as you say, for about two decades, and it's never been so clear and so positive. The signs we are seeing are just terrific. So as far as staying sane, it's beyond that. I'm actually very enthusiastic, and I'm seeing things because I've been crisscrossing the United States giving lectures for more than a decade, and I've never seen anything like we're seeing now.
Hershey's very recently, and Hershey's buys a tremendous amount of sugar, obviously, they have gone non-GMO in their sugar in Hershey Kisses.
I know. And I used to say in lectures that in France, Hershey's has taken out the GMOs, but not in the U.S. Why can't we get the Kisses they enjoy in France? But now we can.
Jeffrey, we all have a huge reason to be grateful to you. You've been working in this area so diligently, so patiently, so persistently. You've been educating people. It's always informative to talk with you. I always learn new things. And on behalf of myself and of Ocean and of everyone involved in the Food Revolution Network, I want to thank you for being with us today and for your outstanding, ongoing, and profoundly needed work.
Thank you, John. And your role as a pioneer in safe eating is known and respected by everyone, and both of you are taking up the mantle and getting this information out to so many people. I love being part of your team. I love being part of the growing team now that's identifying GMOs as a serious culprit. And I can tell you, having spoken at many medical conferences and medical schools, that there are thousands of doctors prescribing non-GMO diets to their patients, millions of people trying to avoid GMOs and often very successfully, so many people giving case studies about improving their health from so many diseases and disorders very quickly on a non-GMO diet. We are at a critical level. There's so much word of mouth, enthusiastic people who know that GMOs are dangerous. My film, Genetic Roulette, I just found out was shown in more than 300 TBS stations covering nearly half the country. Things are getting out there. So I'm very excited that hopefully in just a few years from now, I'll have put myself out of a job.
We'd all like to put ourselves out of jobs, wouldn't we? We've been talking here with Jeffrey Smith, the author of Seeds of Deception, producer of Genetic Roulette, and director of the Institute for Responsible Technology. Jeffrey, you're one of the most clear, compelling, and passionate voices in the movement for safe and healthy food for all of us. Your insights are penetrating, they're troubling, they're galvanizing, and your love shines through in all of it. We want to thank you for your leadership, for your time, for your friendship, and for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you, Arsh.
This concludes our interview, but our work is just getting started. If you feel excited by what you just heard and want to share it with other people in your life, if you want permanent access to 24 more amazing presentations and transcripts, then we have an offer to share. You can get a download and a transcript of the entire Food Revolution Summit, plus a huge collection of bonus resources from our speakers and partners. This empowerment package is available for a major discount between now and the end of the summit. For more information, please visit foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Again, that's foodrevolution.org/empowerment. Thank you so much for joining us in the Food Revolution.